It's time for MacBreak Weekly. I'm wearing this lovely outfit because it's Valentine's Day. Renee Ritchie and Andy Iannocco are here. It's time for a rumor roundup. Lots of iPhone rumors this week. We'll puncture a few, prop up the rest. Also, Apple's attempt to create original content. What do you think? We'll take a look at the trailers for Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke. It's all coming next on MacBreak Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 546, recorded Valentine's Day, Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. Pepper Potts and the Invisible Woman. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 200-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by Jamf. With more than 10,000 customers, Jamf provides Apple management software for Mac, iPad, and iPhone devices. Regardless of the size of your organization or the complexity of your environment, Jamf can automate time-consuming tasks and reduce help desk tickets. Go to Jamf.com/MacBreak to see which Jamf solution is right for your business. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process. It's completely online at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the Valentine's Day edition. Hello, you gorgeous thing, you. Joining us right now, it's Renee Ritchie from beautiful Montreal, where he is wearing a red plaid flannel shirt in a very romantic display of Canadian lust.
Hello. Love up, Leo. I mean, this is how we do it up north. We have to stay warm.
You said, oh, gosh, well, I better get something red on. I didn't realize.
Yes.
It was going to be a lumberjack shirt. Okay.
I mean,
okay.
It's my go-to. I thought I had a red sweatshirt, but it turns out all my red is flannel, and I think that's oddly appropriate.
I love it. Hello, Renee. Also, he's from iMore.com. Also here from the Chicago Sun-Times, Andy Iannocco, who is, he's protesting by dressing entirely in black with a black Pixar baseball cap.
No, this is, well, it's green, and there's some red here.
In the Hayward Fire Department pullover.
He loves Dr. Wave.
Yes.
All it means.
Yes. Andy's endorsements are very confusing.
Well, basically, I'll wear almost everything that's given to me for free, and it's warm on a day like this.
Yeah, is it? Oh yeah, you guys had a lot of snow, didn't you?
Yeah, it snowed for like 3-4 days straight. It was so bad that, like, after 3 days of like not leaving the house for one reason or another, on the day three of actual active snow, it's like, you know what? I'm going to go for a 4-mile walk in the snow because I need to be in the big room at least once a week, or else I feel as though that's detrimental to my sense of elan.
Yes. Well, there's
this weird thing where it snowed and then melted and then snowed and then melted. So we have a layer cake of ice right now.
Oh, I hate it.
And you think it's snow and you step down and then you're on your butt because it was really ice.
Yeah. Yeah. See, people who don't live in snowy climes don't understand that. Oh, wouldn't it be great to take a nice walk through the woods and fresh snowfall? That's great for the first 4.5 steps. When you realize that you're with every step, you have to lift up your foot above 14 inches and then place it on a surface that's not going to just simply give. It's going to support your weight for 2.5 seconds and then send you plummeting down. It stinks.
Crampon sales are skyrocketing, though.
Yes, no one else is skyrocketing. Apple's market cap.
Woohoo!
We're going to get to a trillion by hook or by crook, aren't we?
Just to prove, I mean, it's so doomed, Leo. I mean, it's just so,
Apple's
I don't know
doomed.
What they're do. Give the money back to
Apple's
the shareholders.
Apple's doomed. Let's look at the 5-year graph. 1-year graphs look pretty good, huh?
This just again shows there's an enormous disconnect between what happens and how the market reacts. And I don't think anybody can explain when it goes up and down anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they had a great quarter. They're going up like crazy today. It must be on all of those iPhone rumors, right?
iPhone rumors, AR rumors, yeah. Maybe the side that Tim Cook buttoned his shirt on.
I'm guessing it's not Planet of the Apps that's pushing the stock through the roof here.
Oh, people are so angry. Developer friends are so angry.
Karaoke.
Apple's market cap now $707.57 billion. That's an all-time high. The stock 100 as we talk 134.84. It's up a buck and a half today alone.
Mm. What does that do to investor confidence? I mean, is there a point at which investors think, okay, it can't possibly go much higher than this, I'm going to bail? Whether it's true or not, then they start thinking, well, maybe other people are thinking that, and so I should definitely sell while it's high.
You see this stutter step where, when it gets to when it breaks through a ceiling like that, where a number of people profit take, right? But then it comes mm-hmm. right back up again. The stock market as a whole, I don't understand at all. And so you don't listen to me for stock tips. But the stock market as a whole has been up quite a bit in the last few days and today as well. So big the Trump bump, they call it, is huge. It's huge.
Huge.
And some of Apple's growth is just a general exuberance in the stock
anticipation
market.
Of getting all that money repatriated.
Yeah, you know what? It could be. I mean, I think that could be very big. I would guess, given Apple's history here, that some of that, if not all of that money, would go to stock buybacks, right?
Yeah.
They every time they get more money, every time they see an opportunity, they want to buy some of their stuff back. It's also kind of a good indication of why maybe they've been not being measured in their response to Trump, because that's another the fact that he seems to have a functional relationship with the Oval Office gives investors confidence that whatever happens in the next 3 or 4 years or 8 years of this administration, it's going to benefit big companies like Apple, which.
Sorry, that was just another autoplay video. Gotta love them.
I was wondering who was cutting in to say or 9 months when he gets impeached or put in jail. I thought, wow, that's daring.
Now, I would never say that. Apple's share. This is from Fortune Market Intelligence. Lucinda Shen. Apple's shares are looking tempting again, but iPhone maker's stock may still be the market's forbidden fruit. Because remember, last year's sales went down, but then the quarter was really good. Quarterly results were really good, as one would expect in the fourth quarter. Surely the stock market is not so short-sighted as to say, oh, well, they had a great holiday quarter. We should just buy, right?
Quarter two is down. Short. I guess.
I guess.
I have no ability to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
Also, I mean, this is a great conversation for like the financial pages. Of course, it doesn't it doesn't affect us. It doesn't affect users. Only in the sense that the more profitable Apple is, the more power they have to control their own destinies, the greater their ability to make a plan that goes 5 or 6 or 7 years ahead. Like if they really decided that, for instance, they're going the wrong way on I'm not saying they are, but if they decide, gee, we're going the wrong way on the iPhone, we really need square devices that are 2 inches on a side, they can kind of afford to make a change that's going to affect sales for the next 2 years, but it means that they're going to be in a better shape 3 or 4 years from now. But the only thing that kind of gets me that gets my eyebrow raised is when do you know that Apple is now, they have a market cap that's greater than Microsoft and Google and General Foods and 3M, and that, you know, the company that makes that like springy doggy toy, that company too. Like, okay, it makes me happy.
Yeah, but it's germane for other reasons. I mean, for instance, having a strong stock helps get better employees. It, as you said, it gives them cash to invest, to do R&D. You know, I mean, it means there's a healthy company. So,
RSUs are a promise. Like, you give people RSUs because you think the stock is going to go up when it's already up. I don't know what that does.
Right. Well, that's a good point. If you joined Apple today, your strike price would be today's strike price, which would be very high. It's still pretty amazing that the stock has just been. I mean, they had a 7-1 split. What was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think now. Wow, goes fast.
Yeah. All right. Not that this. I agree with you 100% financial. We're not interested in. In fact, I'm not even interested. And this may be, this is me talking in how a product sells so much. You know, a lot of times people say, well, obviously the Apple Watch is a great product because it's had its record quarter. To me, you know, that's like saying, well, the best meat in the world comes from McDonald's because they sell so much of it. How well something sells isn't an indicator of the quality of the product either. You know, I have to make it. I always believe I should make an independent judgment.
You wouldn't be in my Apple and my McDonald's, Leo.
it is valuable in that it does show that whatever you might say positively or negatively, they're definitely making things that people want to buy. And that goes beyond simply running a successful business. It means that realizing, for instance, in the case of the Apple Watch, that style really is a critical component of selling a device like this, where you can make arguments about its functionality, you can make arguments about its relevance, but when you get down to it, Apple was maybe the only company that realized that one of the most important things about a watch is that it be a cool watch, that people spend hundreds and thousands of dollars sometimes on watches that they think is really, really cool, that they want to wear as a piece of jewelry. So if you start off by making something that seems like it was built really, really well, is a cool thing, has some high-end exotic materials about it, and tells the time within, let's say, 10 or 20 minutes per month, you can have a winning product. And if it ties in with your podcasting app and your stock price app and your home security home automation app, okay, that's a fine bonus, but build a cool watch and they will come.
And it's a combination of metrics too. Like, I agree with you, raw market sales on its own is not an indicator unless they're sustained over time. But when you factor in things like, and I hate to use the term customer sat, which Apple products traditionally have a high level of, but Apple Watch is also enjoying a really high level of, you start to get multiple metrics and you think that, you know, maybe once in a while there is a disconnect between how we cover these products and how a lot of people who just buy them and enjoy them and use them sometimes in far more simple ways or more focused ways than we do enjoy them.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking before the show. I just bought the new Android Wear watch. I got the big LG Watch Sport.
Talk about huge.
But this is a perfect example of a watch that, you know, LG and Google helped them design this, are trying to put every feature that's in the Apple Watch into it and then some. It's got a GPS, but it also has a SIM card and LTE in it. And the thing is, it's unwearable.
The antennas are in the straps, right?
So the straps about halfway down on your wrist don't bend. These are the antennas. It's thick. It's heavy. Even I'm a big guy. It doesn't look bad on me, but I don't want to wear it because it's just uncomfortable.
I saw it on Jason Howell, and it looked big even on him, and I was jokingly saying it was a smart kettlebell.
Yeah, it's like a kettlebell. And look at the, you know, this is the default watch face. Is just ugly. It's an example of piling everything into the interface without much care to, you know, how it looks.
And in defense, realize that this was meant to show off a lot of what Android Wear 2 does, and that it's different when it's different when you make a device like this than when Apple makes a device. If Apple makes an Apple Watch, that's all you get. That's all it will be this year. You're getting nothing else. Nothing else is available.
There'll be many Android Wears. Right.
Yeah, and the other manufacturers have been waiting for Android Wear 2. Android Wear 2 was delayed for about 6 months, so they've been sort of holding off to release their new hardware. So you'll see slimmer models, you'll see more delicate models, and one of the things I kind of like about Android Wear is that the default watch face is just the one
you
that
can change it.
Get,
of course,
the one, it's just the one you get when you power up. I've been wearing a kitty cat watch.
I know,
face
I like yours. Yeah.
When you wake up, the kitty cat like goes up from a nap and blinks instead of flicks its tail. Exactly.
Battery life on this is not as good as the Apple Watch. It really underscores. And by the way, I'm not a huge fan of the Apple Watch. I'm wearing it, but.
I got mine now, Leo. I'm matching.
I know. You finally got the edition, huh?
And I put it with the coffee band, so now I have coffee and foam.
Well, one of the nice, you know, I didn't like the idea of a white watch, but I have to say that is one of the good things about a white watch is you can have a broader variety of bands.
And I get your workout notifications, and I respond like pizza with pizza because that's funny to me now.
Donuts and stuff, yeah.
donuts. Hamburgers.
Yeah, stop sending donuts, can you, please?
But that's part of the fun. I mean, I sent Serenity Caldwell posted on Instagram that she was doing – it was just like a ridiculously intense workout because she's part of the Canadian team for roller derby now. And I got the notification and I sent back a piece of pizza and I just got incredible side eyes as a response. But it was a funny, very human
interaction. No, that's a great – and by the way, the real point of the interaction is I saw what you did. Good job. Whether you send donuts, pizza, or whatever, it's a communication. I have to say that is probably the single – for me anyway, and this is one of the things about the Apple Watch. It has a feature for everybody. But for me, the best feature of the Apple Watch – because it doesn't – it's not so different from the LG Watch Sport that, you know, in functionality. Except that sharing thing really is a strong encouragement. I want to fill those rings. Those rings – that was actually quite smart.
It's the fitness and the authentication. Like anytime my Mac logs in or I use Apple Pay or I use a boarding pass, it just – it feels magical to me. And that I think is the kind of moments that I've been waiting for.
Those are, by the way, you know, they added Android Pay. This is the first watch, to my knowledge, that has NFC and supports Android Pay.
You never want to be without it after you try it.
That's a feature 2.0. It actually doesn't work quite as well as I think that it does in the Apple Watch.
Disappointing. You've played with it, obviously, yeah?
Yeah. So it's nice to see, especially in an emerging new type of computing like this, it's really good to see a whole bunch of people taking a whole bunch of different swings at this. The interesting thing to play with about this one is the fact that it is a completely GSM based watch, so that you can leave the house without a phone.
Right, I like
very credibly, because you will get it. AT&T at least will let you sort of mirror your phone SIM, so you don't have to buy a separate account for it. So you will still get text notifications. You can still get things like WhatsApp. You still can get like online messaging, and you still can get navigation and data. You can put it. It's got enough storage, so you can put enough music on it that you can use it with your.
And this is something that the Apple Watch doesn't do. It streams because you have LTE connectivity, and that is a nice feature that you can walk out the door, no music on your watch, no phone in your pocket, and stream from Google Play Music.
Yeah. It is way too big though for like a regular person to daily wear unless they are committed to this concept. But it's interesting to see that as a concept of here is a mobile device that's not designed to be a 21st century computer. It is designed to keep. I'm leaving the house. I'm leaving the office for a reason because I don't want to be bothered, but I do want to still be in touch if something important happens. So no, I can't. You can't just zip me this Microsoft Word document. I'll do some edits and then click on my approvals to send it back to you. But if you tell me that, turns out that our vice president in operations has just taken $8.1 million out of the company checking account and is in Aruba right now, you can't say, okay, I'm going long launch canceled. I'm coming back to the office. So it's an interesting concept. We'll see if other companies can build on it and particularly if they can build it smaller with better batteries. Any type of device like this, the battery is an absolute killer.
Did you find it had poor battery life?
Yeah, from what you're expecting to do, because with a phone, it doesn't even have to last all day, even though many phones like the iPhone certainly do, because you get to the office or you get home and you plug it in and it's on the nightstand and you're still using it. You can't really take it off and top it up while you're working. Right. So it's hard to get it to if I put it on at 9 a.m. At around 4 or 5, I would have to start budgeting how I'm using this thing. Whereas with my Apple Watch and my Android Wear watch, I can count on a full day if I'm coming back home at the end of the day. On a travel day, it'll even make it to my 11 p.m. like red eye flight if I'm flying home. But both watches are certainly not going to be ready for me for my getting my ride from the airport back to my house in the morning. But yeah, that's not enough. So it is just a first swing. This isn't like this is the only watch that's going to be available. There are a lot of really cool things in Android Wear I love the fact that there are things in Apple Watch that I wish would transfer over to Android Wear. There are things in Android Wear I wish would transfer over to Apple Watch. And I think in 2 years' time, once the system starts feeding on itself a little bit better, we're really going to have some great hardware and software.
Yeah, and the thing with Apple is that they did a lot of the experimenting internally. Like they made all sorts of shapes and sizes, and they had, as far as I know, a version that had LTE on it. But it's not just the battery power, it's thermals. And when you look at the first generation Apple Watch, that ran the S1 at the thermal limits. It just could not get any hotter and still be a shipping product. And the ones that had cellular radios in them got super hella hot, especially when you're wearing them on your wrist. They decided that, you know, though, with the existing chipsets and existing power profiles and thermals, it would not be a great product to ship. So they're waiting until that sort of technology becomes more practical to meet the battery limits, that the battery requirements that they have for them. But I think, you know, as Andy said, as we see all the companies experiment with them internally and externally, we'll get to a point, maybe not soon, where we have sort of that Tony Stark ideal where you have your watch and you press a button and your holographic display comes up, or your augmented reality, and you type away and goes back down, and then you, well, that's your everything device. I mean, I'm looking forward to that.
That's why we talk a little bit about other devices, because it helps out Apple and everybody to see, here are devices actually in the field being used by real people. And so that's where every company that's smart is going to get a lot of its information from. There's so many times where you can do so much internal testing and you can put so much thought into this and come up to so many rational conclusions, including, wow, but the thing is, there is no pocket that is big enough to hold this phone. It is so big and ungainly. But then somebody gets crazy and says, okay, we will put a postcard sized phone out there. And I'll be damned, people haven't seen your research, and you can't go door to door saying, but I have research that says you don't want to buy this. So, like I said, you have to, technology really is like putting on a play. You can spend all kinds of time writing it. You can put all kinds of time casting it. You can be in rehearsals for 4 or 5 months, but you don't know what you have until you put in front of a paying audience.
And Eddie Q buys one and forces you to make a small tablet.
Yeah.
You can put a strap on an iPad Mini. It's, at least if you're gonna make me feel stupid, and at least give me full functionality, give me full LTE,
Amazonian
and streaming
bracers.
Netflix. Yes.
Well, let's take a break. Come back. We're going to talk about it's for some reason. Why is this nonstop iPhone rumors this week? It's like is it because they're manufacturing it now, Renee? You think? And
yeah, I mean they're supply side leaks. I think start ramping up around this time.
Yeah. Well, I'll get your opinions on whether I hate covering rumors, especially 7 months out, because we're probably not going to see the new iPhone until September.
You just make it even more outlandish. We'll just start making stuff.
Yeah,
up.
You can make up stuff at this point, including your clear phone.
Yeah,
and we'll get to that's the killer tech.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that, but we're also seeing them actually manufacturing phones that they're only thinking of making because they have to test them now.
Exactly. So take it all with a grain of salt, but we'll have it for you just because I know you're interested in a moment. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? If you're in that position, you know you have an important job. The person you hire to fill that opening in your company or the new position you've created in your company can make or break your company. It can be a great employee, can change your company, can transform it, take it to the moon. A bad employee can go the other way. All right. So let's hire the right person. And I know it's kind of a pain, the worst time, you know, because you're already down somebody and now you got to go out and find somebody new. I know I'm a business owner. I know how it is. It's no fun. But when we found ZipRecruiter, it got a lot more fun. And it got a lot easier to find the perfect person because let's assume the right person's out there. How do you get to them? You know, what job board do you use? How do you reach them? How do you find that needle in a haystack? Well, ZipRecruiter really makes this a lot easier. First of all, you post your job once on ZipRecruiter, and it goes to 200 plus job sites and social media like Facebook and Twitter. Just one click. And you can find candidates in any city, any industry, nationwide, you know. I mean, you're getting everywhere. And then what's nice is all of those job applications, and you'll get them right away because ZipRecruiter is going to match them up to something like 6 million resumes, current resumes they already have in their database. And then more will come in, and they all come into the ZipRecruiter interface. They do not come to your phone and mailbox. No, they go to this easy-to-use interface. It automatically formats the resumes so they're easy to read. You know, there's kind of this uniform thing. You can have questionnaires as part of the application process, true, false, essay questions, yes, no, whatever, multiple choice. That way you can really screen out anybody that's not right and pick the right person fast, literally in a few days, and really have confidence that this process works. No wonder ZipRecruiter has been used by more than 1 million companies, including the Fortune 100 and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And you can do it right now free, ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And I'll tell you what, once you use it, you're going to say, I don't care how much it costs. This is how I'm doing it from now on. ZipRecruiter, it's very affordable. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We love it. And so do some of the biggest and smallest companies in the world. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. So here we go. Rumor Central. First of all, this is not a rumor, but it does affect the rumors about the iPhone 8. Apple, apparently, some sharp-eyed person noticed on page 4 of the website at the Wireless Power Consortium that Apple was suddenly a member. Not last week, but this week. Now, that's the Qi charging standard. A lot of phones use Qi, Qi. A lot of Qi pads out there. There's another one. There's the Power Pad, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
But this is runs counter to what we people have been speculating, which, frankly, I didn't credit much, that Apple was going to do some sort of charging where at distance where you could just...
You know, I hate to be that guy, Leo, but Apple did inductive charging on the Apple Watch 2 years ago. So this is like, even if there was no future charging, wireless charging...
they're doing it already. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is just this has both nothing and everything to do with
right.
with another iPhone.
It could just be the watch. By the way, they never said the watch is Qi, but I think it's like kind of Qi.
It's quasi Qi compatible. If you have a Qi charger and you can put the right sort of magnet with it, it will start to charge.
And I have charged Qi stuff with my Apple Puck.
Yes.
So I guess it's Qi-ish.
Yes.
Funny, I mean, it uses the funny same you don't standard, look Qi-ish.
Yeah.
No. Qi,
we had fun with that because we had a bunch of Android Wear watches with Trinity Caldwell and Derek Kessler in a room, and we were going through all the different adapters trying to see what would charge what. And you could charge any of them off the Apple one, but if you didn't have a magnet, the Apple Watch would not charge any of the Qi chargers.
Ah, the magnet's critical. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes it non-conformant, but I think I like a magnet on a Qi charger because it sucks whatever it is, the phone or whatever, into position. That's the big problem with Qi, and one of the reasons I think people are speculating Apple might do wireless at distance is because the accuracy, we talked about this last week, is hard to get that.
It's that
right
Phil Schiller statement where he goes back to like Phil Schiller's long said that he doesn't think that wireless charging was a mature technology, and then when they asked him why Apple Watch, he said, well, because we just think that it's more convenient for you to come down, put down your watch, not fuss with cables. And that's easily extended to, we think it's more convenient for you not to fuss with cables or pads. If you put it within whatever it is, 3, 6, 8, 10 inches,
you don't have
to
be pretty close,
you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. So I don't know if you credit this. There's a study by a company called IHS Technology. They did a consumer survey that showed that 90% of consumers want wireless charging on their next phone. Does that sound credible?
No, I mean, so it's so funny because Daniel Bader, who writes for Android Central, did an article about, where has all the wireless charging gone in Android? It was so popular. Palm Pre came out, and Palm Pre, I think, really jump-started the inductive charging. And then Samsung made a very Palm Pre-like Galaxy
Google
S.
Google doesn't do it now. It.
Yeah, they stopped doing it. And aside from Samsung, not a lot of people are pushing it. And it really, I mean, it hasn't changed much. And I think Qualcomm's high-speed charging sort of took the edge off of it because you can charge so fast off a cable now that it was really more of a convenience.
I would like to see that in the iPhone 8.
They're wary of the battery implications still.
It stresses the battery, doesn't it?
Yeah. So they do, like if you put in an iPad charger, it'll charge faster, but I think they're still conservative when it comes to how hard they hit the battery.
In general, you throw more amperage at the device, it will charge faster. More wattage, really, but since on USB, the volts are stuck at 5.
If you say Shazam right, it will charge instantly.
Shazam! all right, well, that's so. I take your point. It doesn't really mean anything that Apple joined the Qi consortium.
No, usually Apple has a love-hate relationship with these standards bodies because as much as they get compatibility from joining them, I think they often feel that they're restrictive and slow-moving and doesn't let them adapt and change and test and try and experiment, which is what we've seen them do in other everything from the World Wide Web Consortium to the USB when it came to making Lightning and things like that. So I think they'll do what they want to do, and then when it suits their motivations or purposes, they'll also join the associations or standards committees.
This one is more than a rumor, I think, and not at all surprising. Apple has inked a second contract with Samsung to buy OLED panels. The first contract was 60, I think, 60 million, and now they've got a second one for 100 million. So we're talking something like 160 million OLED panels from Samsung that they've locked in. Samsung has not confirmed this for privacy reasons.
I am so not looking forward to all the burn-in gate stories next year, Leo.
Why? Is OLED more prone to burn-in?
Sure. I mean, OLED has burn-in issues. People complain about it on Android phones, on Apple Watches.
Really? I didn't
know television.
That. Okay.
But it won't be. It's not a thing, but it will be a thing, I think, as soon as Apple makes it.
I really like OLED screens, and I even bought an OLED TV.
They've become very, very good technology.
Yeah. I think that is – it's time probably.
Quantum Dot 2, that was a big question for me. Would they just skip OLED and go to Quantum Dot? But it looks like Quantum Dot is not where it needs to be yet for that to happen.
Quantum Dot is LCD, but a better LCD.
Yes.
Despite the name.
None of these stuff are perfect technologies. All of them have their advantages and their disadvantages. Yeah. Some have better power consumption. Some have better saturation. Some have better color reproduction. And it's just you always want to sort of pick the one that you can cover up the drawbacks the most and amplify the advantages the most for your product.
Samsung, which puts OLEDs in all of its phones, is apparently, according to at least one rumor, building a dedicated facility for building displays just for Apple. Because if you have to build 160 million, you're going to have to build a factory. I'm sorry, Andy. Andy's low. Maybe that's...
Yeah.
There you go.
Is it my end or yours?
I don't know. You sound good now. I think it was ours, okay. Which means it was ours.
No, I was just saying that the limiting factor on display technology is yield, particularly when you talk about a device like a phone, and particularly when you talk about a device like the iPhone. They have wonderful, wonderful display technologies. We see at CES, for instance, Samsung and other companies, but mostly Samsung is really, really hot. And look what we can do with flexible displays. And as a matter of fact, there's a rumor that they're going to be showing off behind the scenes and not with any sort of announcement, a actual folding, basically a flip phone that flips out into a full-size screen module. And that's not something that they're actually pitching. It's something that they're showing off to business people to say, would you buy 13.8 million of these screens if we actually made this a real thing? It really is about how many can we manufacture? What's the reject rate going to be? And as Renee says, is it going to be a problem when people suddenly get a new style of screen on an existing phone that behaves differently than the other ones? Are they going to be sending phones back that are perfectly good, even because they don't understand that in the first 3 days of turning these things on, you are not going to be used to the colors or the angularity of the screen?
All right, now we get into the weird rumor side. From Mac Otakara, a Japanese Mac fan magazine, the rumor that Apple won't even use a lightning adapter, that everything will be wireless. Credible?
That's hard. Well, I mean, even on an Apple watch, you have mini lightning. It's just they pave over it so that people don't futz with it. The Apple TV has USB-C. I mean, I think we're still at the point where you absolutely need some way to hard. It's like the Matrix, Leo. It's fun in games, but you need a hard line at some point.
But the two cases you mentioned, those are diagnostic purposes only. They're not user accessible. Yeah. So it could be conceivable that they'd build something that was not user accessible in the iPhone.
Yeah, but I mean, if you follow the logic flow on that, it's like
why do that?
It's not efficient. Wireless charging is still not efficient. Yeah. It's super convenient, but it's not efficient. Yeah. If you're going to have to put in a port for diagnostics anyway, and if you have this incredible accessory market for everything from tie-in cameras to audio devices, it seems far-fetched to me that they'd be willing to throw all of that away at this point.
Yeah, the question is, what does Apple gain by that? And we had the big song and dance, the goat and weasel show about why they deleted the headphone jack. And there were some credible things to say about why it's in their benefit. Why is it in their benefit to delete all ports from it? They don't get anything from it. And as Renee said, it's not just conveniencing or inconveniencing users. It makes it really difficult when someone comes in with a broken phone. How do you get into the copper to ask the phone, "What's wrong, honey? Go tell mommy. It's okay." When you have a completely wireless solution, you're kind of limited as to what you can do, even if you do have full bore access as the developer of the device.
How about this one from Digitimes? This is the rumor roundup. Apple reportedly planning an iris scanner in the iPhone 8. That wouldn't be the first time we saw an iris scanner in the Note 5. It was Note 7, I mean.
Face scans, iris. I mean, biometrics.
It's a cool thing to put if you're competing against 18 different manufacturers that are making the exact same thing as you make. If you're making the iPhone, you don't have to bother with iris scanning. No one's complaining about iris scanning.
Fingerprints, fine. I had iris scanning both on a Windows phone, a Lumia phone, which was really unusable. It would say, okay, up now, down, 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 right. little left, right, right. The Samsung Note 7 was much better, but it's still not anywhere as fast or easy as a fingerprint.
Or bloated. Are you retaining water?
Yeah. You got to go like this. Now, I should point out Microsoft Windows Hello, which is an authentication platform, but it has face recognition that is really great. It's fast. It's effective. It can wear glasses or not. I mean, it's really good, and that might not be – we've seen that in some Samsung phones before too, but not very
I was going to make that exact same point. It's also situational. The idea of having Windows Hello means that you sit down at your computer and as you're reaching for your coffee, it authenticates you. Whereas with a phone, people are fingerprint recognition is now so ingrained into us that as we're taking it out of our pockets, we are putting our finger on the place that authenticates us, and by the time it's up on our faces, it's not a solution to a problem that anybody is complaining about. The only thing I can think about, and this is just having a conversation conjecture, is that it's winter. I'm wearing gloves all the time. I have to take off my glove to wake up my phone. And this is where I'm switching back to a pin based authentication, because I can at least keep my inner glove liner that has that little sensor, that little copper pad on it. I can at least keep some of my skin covered up if I'm just authenticating my phone. But you have to look at what problem does this solve for anybody, manufacturer or user. And more importantly, how does this help Apple or anybody sell more phones? And that's just, again, it's a fun thing to speculate about, but no.
Yeah.
And my big dream for this stuff, also one thing is biometrics are username and not password, and they're convenience and not security. So they don't make your device safer. They just give you alternate ways of getting into it. But my big dream is still ambient authentication, where I no longer have to do a lot of actions, but it catches a glimpse of my face. It registers a bit of my fingerprint no matter where I'm touching it on the phone. It knows my gait. It knows my pulse or whatever. And it just knows that it's me. I don't have to worry so much about deliberate authentication anymore.
That is definitely the next. I don't think that's even a long way off. Google says they're already doing that. Because you walk around. In fact, that's an you kind of nailed it, Nandy, when you said, well, face recognition makes sense at a computer, but for a phone, you want something kind of entirely different. I think you're right. I think Apple could even implement this year. Your phone really knows it's you from so many of these incidental
voice, eye,
tips,
face, everything,
that it really could just not work unless it's you.
Yeah, we talked a while ago about how just the system of the glass keyboard on iOS, it's not just as simple as if the user touches inside this rectangle, that's the letter I. It has to figure out, okay, it's not really on the I, it could be the I or the O, but given where he landed this keystroke and the previous two letters, I'm betting that he actually wanted to get a U instead of an I, and so that's why you get the U instead of the I. There are researchers that are working on stuff like that where, okay, not only is it recognizing a fingerprint, but how squarely is this person putting their finger on the pad? And is this different from the way this person normally activates the phone? Is this a time when this user normally activates a phone? Is this a place? Is it at a certain angle? There are all kinds of metrics that are being added to this to just an experimental way to say, is it possible to authenticate somebody just by context and make it accurate enough to at least put it into play as an alternative? So far, no, but it's really, really interesting to I was talking to one researcher. This is about a year ago, who was telling me about, he thought that he could get about 60% of it just by the angle at which you're holding the phone when you try to unlock it. So it could basically, he says that he could make it so that it would, at least if you make a mistake, it will give you the benefit of the doubt in the interest of getting you to your data quicker. But it wouldn't be something he would trust for an actual security.
Well, but that's one factor. But what if you had 20 different factors and you combined them?
Right, that's what he's talking about.
Oh, okay.
But he's saying just by seeing that, well, look, he almost never holds it like this. He almost never holds it like that. So I'm going to be prejudiced against accepting a pin that maybe is not quite correct. I'm sorry, meaning that combining that with the actual keypad control. Did he get it close enough that I think that this combined with other factors, I'm willing to trust that was a three he intended to tap instead of a four? Yes, I'm willing to accept that as a three. So, but you're absolutely right. We could get to a state where, given that all the radios are on, given that all the sensors are on, it could figure out that he is lifting up his phone in a context and in a way that is consistent with 99% of the way times that he or she normally lifts up his or her phone to use this thing. So
yeah, and you combine that with the fact that his gait was identifiable. He's in a location that we know. I see his face. I hear his voice. I mean, if you add all of those factors, I think you can have almost certain identification, you know? I mean, really strong identification.
Similar to that feature that Renee really likes, where if he authenticates his watch properly in the morning and keeps it on his wrist, the rest of the iOS and macOS infrastructure will trust that it's still yours. So you can also apply that to unlocking a phone, where the last time that this person unlocked the phone, he typed in an eight key PIN, and also for another transaction, he actually used his fingerprint. And from the sensor readings that we have taken in the 11 minutes since he did that, it is not consistent with him leaving this alone or passing to somebody else. It's still within his control, and therefore, I'm just going to let the phone wake up on its own.
So. Yeah,
I love multi-factor. Like, I love the fingerprint and the Bluetooth trusted object.
I bet we're months, years, a year or two at most away from that. Google had a patent in a gate recognition patent in 2010.
Just getting acceptable error ratios, I think, to make it a consumer product is the last hurdle.
Yeah. They got to be. Google's even said it's working on this. So it's really almost a race between Apple and Android at this point. It's ironic because we were talking about that in Android Wear 2.0. It has, because it has Apple Pay capability and the LG Sport does, or I'm sorry, Android Pay capability, it has to do something like the Apple Watch does to make sure that somebody didn't borrow your watch and use it. It's PIN based or password based. It really shows you how much more elegant and how well thought out Apple's watch is compared to what, even with the example of the Apple Watch, Android ended up doing.
some of the stuff is non-trivial to implement.
They couldn't do it. Yeah. Any other rumors? Let's see. There was that rumor that what do we know? We don't know anything. Do we think there'll be three phones
based on past behavior?
Do we think there'll be one that's over $1,000?
Current one's over $1,000, isn't it?
It starts at $750. Base unit.
If they did sort of if they introduced the iPhone edition, let's say, and no, they're not going to make it out of solid gold.
Ceramic would make me happy.
But exactly, if they decided that we can make this an exclusive thing, we can internally say that we're not going to make more than 50,000 of these, not announce it's a limited edition, but simply say that we feel as though we can do 60,000 of these. Based on that amount of money, we would have to charge X dollars, or I'm sorry, 60,000. Let's call it $500,000, just to make it non-ridiculous. But yeah, I could see them doing it. I don't know if they would do it as, hey, it's the 10th anniversary. I don't think they've had enough bad history with, hey, this is the X anniversary edition of of our hardware.
Yeah.
But yeah, if they could say that we are making something that is an exciting jewelry-like piece of hardware.
Wasn't that 25th anniversary iMac a very limited edition or not? I feel like it was.
I think it was the 20th. It was supposedly limited, but they didn't sell any, so they didn't have to worry about it. They had plenty. Don't worry.
It was like the
appointments for the gold Apple Watch. Like, we're going to be taking appointments 8 months in advance. You have a 15-minute window. And then by day three, here you go.
Yeah.
Here you go.
For me, it's like Apple's a secretive company, but they're also a very logical company, and they tend to do things they don't tend to do a lot of crazy Ivans. They don't do a lot of really wild stuff. So if you look at what their lineup is like now with the iPhone SE, iPhone 6S, 6S Plus, 7, 7 Plus, and you shift that forward a year, they have to have an entry-level model. They have to have a model that's just one step behind for people who don't want to pay full price for things. And then they did with iPad Pro, and they announced the 13-inch iPad Pro. That was considerably more expensive than the iPads of the time. And the iPhone 7 Plus was $20 more expensive, and they found there is some elasticity in the market. So if they want to go with an iPhone Pro and position it as, this is like the new top of the end, we wanted to go out of our way and do something really special, and it's limited quantity, so they have to constrain it based on price, because they're not going to be able to make enough if everybody could just order them. But I think it's easy to see sort of a September event where you have your normal iPhone upgrades that keep those price tiers in place, and then you sort of get the cherry on top, which is this future thinking iPhone, which I would really love to see, because I don't think we've had those kind of phones since like the Nexus 1 and the iPhone 4, I would love to see a leap forward again.
Yeah. Also, I think Apple is the only company that could really pull this off. There have been a lot of phone makers going back to the Nokia days who would say, well, we've got lots of really, really rich people using our phones, and they want to make sure that they make people see that they're not using the basic free with contract phone. Ours has a special jeweled case, and it's an onyx inlay, and this $5,000 device that has concierge service and comes in a personalized rosewood presentation box. And yeah, you could get some press with it, but it's like the $5,000 cheeseburger that you can buy at buy in a New York eatery. It's there to get PR. Apple could actually sell, I think, $1,000 or $1,500 phone if they make it really nice. If it's not just we took the same mold that we normally pour cheap metal into, and we poured an expensive metal into it. That's not as good as saying that's how do we know you didn't just buy one of the cases that comes out 3 months later that you can buy on eBay from a Chinese manufacturer for $18 to make it look like the expensive phone. But the other thing is that remember that people are kind of we've been beaten down into expecting that we might not be able to buy the exact device in the exact configuration we want when we walk into the store. They can make it a limited edition without really announcing it. They could simply say that they could simply announce it as something that we're making it in lesser quantities, but there's no cap on the run, and just expect that people are going to have to chase after store to buy their special edition red ceramic iPhone 12.
I love this headline from 9 to 5 Mac. Target calls Apple Pay awesome, says it's working on bringing support to its stores. Nope. It all started with a tweet from Target customer support saying Apple Pay's awesome. This is in response to a question on Twitter. We're working on getting this technology into our stores. We'll catch up with the 21st century soon. And okay, and then everybody said, wow, Target, which has been kind of notable in its refusal to do Apple Pay, when this story broke, 9 to 5 got an email from Target clarifying that the Twitter support account was incorrect and it is not currently exploring integrating Apple Pay into stores. We have no plans or work underway currently to make Apple Pay available in our stores. We offer it for online purchases. And while we're exploring mobile wallet opportunities for our stores, we have no updates to share. Why is Target against Apple Pay?
Originally, they were they signed a competing agreement.
Oh, they were part of the Walmart deal.
Yeah. And the rumor was that as soon as that they had an out on that clause, they'd be adopting Apple Pay. But then that just didn't materialize.
Yeah, because currency died. It's dead. So, there was no solution.
Died a deathly death.
Shocking.
Part of it, though, is believe it or not, just training. How much is it going to cost to retrain all of our employees or change our training materials to include? Here's what happens when someone wants to pay with their phone.
Do they not do touch to pay at all now?
I haven't been in a Target in a while.
I can't remember
in 3 or 4 months. And that's another part of their problem. The things that I would typically buy at a Target are either available at the store that I walk to, that's only a mile and a half away from my house, or something that's more convenient for me to buy on Amazon because I'm willing to wait. I'm willing to wait 2 days for paper towels. That's perfectly fine by me. And it also comes back to, will this cause more people to shop at Target, and or will it save us more money in loss prevention through fraud than it will to retrain people and to make sure that all of our hardware is consistent across the line?
It's so funny. I was in Target maybe a month ago and I didn't even notice. That's how little I really care about
this. The weird thing is
that somebody, Scooter X in our chat room, saying Target does not do NFC at all in any form.
Yeah, see, that's the weird thing, because Target failed in Canada, but it was here briefly, and it just did. I used Apple Pay there because they use it everywhere. Any store you go to has Tap to Pay, so any store here takes Apple Pay, and I'm assuming Android Pay as well.
It comes with the package.
No one wonders which store is going to be using.
Well, the sad thing is we got chips now. And stores that don't do touch to pay, it's a pain to use a chip card because you push it in and you leave it in, and it's a much slower process than the old swipe process.
Yeah, we got used to it. I mean, that's all we had for about 5 or 7 or even 10 years. So we just all got used to using it. And that's why it was a revelation when we got Tap to Pay. And now increasingly websites are giving me Apple Pay. The story I'm going to talk about later, I used Apple Pay for that, and I used Apple Pay to buy some software this morning. And I have the scanner on my phone or my computer. I just tap my finger and it's done, and it's so convenient.
Speaking of the 21st century, let's go back to the last century when macro malware used to be a problem on the Mac. It's back. Ay, ay, ay. So Mac malware has been discovered in Microsoft Word documents with auto-running Mac Rose, does Word not give you this dialogue that I'm showing right here? This document contains macros. Do you want to run them? Doesn't it warn you? Or does this actually automatically run? If you enable macros, the automatic macro starts to run a Python script, which checks to see if Little Snitch is running, because it doesn't want to get caught. So another reason to use Little Snitch. Then it downloads a second stage payload, because Little Snitch would say, hey, somebody's trying to do an outbound transaction. It downloads a second stage payload from a specific URL, decrypts the payload, executes its content. And, of course, what was in the payload will malware. The Python code itself is sourced from the open source Empire project. The code is used almost verbatim. Fortunately, the payload file now is inaccessible, so that the site that was offering that has been shut down. So it's not, in other words, particularly sophisticated malware. But this used to be, in fact, this was, the first Mac malware I ever got, I think, was a Word macro. Melissa was a Word macro. 1999. So we can virus like it's 1999. Speaking of which, Prince is back. Everybody stream some Prince?
Hard man.
Apple Music got him, but so does Spotify and a lot of other streaming services. It turns out that look at this is good. That pop-up. I see what you did there with cats looking at you is saying, here you are at VentureBeat running an ad blocker. How dare you? You don't have to unblock. Just click away from it. No, you don't have to do that. Yeah, it just goes away. That's the least intrusive. I don't blame him. We run ad blockers just so you understand, so you don't see a whole bunch of ads while we're trying to show you sites. Although, Carsten, you got to get a better ad blocker on there. Adblock Plus, really? Come on,
well,
Carsten.
We got to see kitties.
I'm completely sidetracked. What was I talking about? Oh, Prince.
The purple one.
Prince. Yeah. So he famously pulled his music from streaming services because he felt it didn't he didn't get paid appropriately, didn't honor his music. But his estate has different plans. So they've restored it to Google Play, Apple Music, Spotify, and other services.
Yeah, that's a good move. A lot of things happen when the original creator, be it a writer, be it a cartoonist, be it a musician, when they die, their intensity over certain issues is no longer that louder argument at the table. We're not just talking about making money off of the person's catalog. We're talking about surviving relatives, surviving family, surviving business associates and friends. They're like, how do we keep this person's name alive? And people might have complaints about Snoopy being on the Metropolitan Life blimp, but it kept that character in people's minds and reminding them that this thing exists. There was a complaint when I think it was Julian. Might have been Julian Lennon when Yoko Ono and the estate approved the use of John Lennon quote or a John Lennon movie or something. And I think was it a Volkswagen ad? And there was some backlash about how, he would never approved of this. And said, well, look, if we have an ad running in 20 different countries for 2 weeks, that is something that might be the first time anybody has heard of our father and checks into their music. And so I spent the weekend deciding to listen to all the David Bowie albums that I somehow missed, the last half of his career. He was doing such eclectic work, and sometimes I would miss one or two. And because his music is on streaming, I got caught up on like 8 different albums that I would certainly not have spent $90 or $100 to buy these albums just to sample them. There are going to be people who have heard all about Prince and they've heard the 2 hits who have never heard even the Purple Rain soundtrack from start to finish. And now they can actually look into his discography and then become fans and then carry that fandom to the next generation. So it's not just about the money. It really is about we want his music to stay alive. Yeah. We want people to understand him, not as somebody who had a sexually suggestive guitar, but someone who is one of the most incredible musicians and performers of any generation.
Where do you stand on Bruno Mars doing the Prince tribute on the Grammy Awards with the guitar? How do you feel about that?
Boy, it's like singing a Janis Joplin song that she absolutely owns.
Bruno Mars. And if anybody could do Prince, it's Bruno Mars. But maybe he shouldn't have done a Prince tribute band. But just a song. And by the way, Morris Day in the time. Still got it. Still got it. That was awesome.
I had to take back 3% of the bad things I've said about Apple Music lately because I loaded it up as soon as it was available, and I went to the Prince playlist, and it started with the Batman song.
So, front load.
Yeah, you want Prince? We know you like Batman. We'll give you that one first.
They might have known that because I don't think I've ever even heard the Prince Batman song.
Oh man,
from the soundtrack. This is exactly
what I was talking about. I was, of course, a fan of the movie. I bought the soundtrack. I wanted the Danny Elfman music, but I got this Prince song. It reminded me. Oh, that's that guy who had that music that I'd heard of before, and that actually got me buying Prince albums instead of just the singles.
Yeah. Somebody said the Prince tribute band should be called Prance. Okay. that's good. Nice one, Jay, in our chat room. Let's take a break.
Raspberry Beret.
Raspberry Beret. Apple sponsored the B-Sides security conference, by the way. Nice, Apple. Thank you. Good job. That's a great security conference. And other supporting sponsors, Google and Dropbox. But not one of the two leading sponsors. Okay, fine. HackerOne and Fitbit were the leading sponsors. Our show today brought to you by Jamf. It's the hard-to-say name that really can help you and your Apple network big time. JAMF, the gold standard for managing Apple devices in the workplace. 10,000 customers around the globe. 7 million Macs, iPads, and iPhones managed by Jamf. Jamf helps IT provide the user-friendly experience employees expect from their Apple devices. That's why they brought them into the workplace, while empowering them to be their most productive self. You know what? I think it's time IT gets some love, baby. On Valentine's Day, some love. You may remember Jamf Pro, formerly Casper Suite, right? Now it's called Jamf Pro. It's the tool you need to deploy devices without even touching them. Automate device status and updates. Keep inventory data on hardware and software, and ensure device security. Jamf Pro offers, I really like this idea for the business, a customizable enterprise app store so your users can take care of themselves. They can install the apps and update the software from that store that they need to do their job. World-class support and training, Jamf is the best solution for managing Apple. You know, a couple of years ago, we talked a lot about it. IBM decided to give employees a choice, PCs or Macs. And all of a sudden, IBM was loaded with Macs. And IBM said, whoa, we got to do something. They went to Jamf Pro. That helped them deploy fast. In over a year now, they have more than 90,000 Macs at IBM. It's the largest Mac deployment in the world. And they do it all, and this is Jamf Pro, man. You got to give props to Jamf Pro. They do it all with five IT admins. Five. That's the power of Jamf Pro. Now, there are actually a number of solutions. So there's Jamf Now. That used to be called Bushel. It's all called Jamf Now. So they got Jamf Now, Jamf Pro. Jamf Now is fast, accessible, very affordable cloud-based management. If you're a small business, you don't know, we'll have to go with a pro solution. You don't even need IT, frankly, with Jamf Now. Anyone can support users in the workplace. You probably could do it. If you're watching the show, you certainly have enough Mac knowledge to do this. And it's everything you need in a small business and no extra stuff and no training, no documentation required. You can use Jamf Now to remotely configure device settings, mass distribute apps, enforce security measures like passcodes and lost mode. You know, if you've got people in your enterprise with iPhones you bought and they're not turning on Find My iPhone, That's annoying. They go, hey, boss, I lost my iPhone. Well, do you have Find My iPhone? No, I didn't ever turn it on. Well, with Jamf Now, you can turn it on. Set up, manage, and protect your Apple devices in minutes. Whether you got 10 devices or 10,000, Jamf helps you empower your end users to be more productive, all while making your life easier. I'm gonna use it at home with my kids because that really annoys me. That kids, oh, I lost my phone. No, you didn't lose your phone. Turn on Find My iPhone. Go to Jamf.com/MacBreak to find out how Jamf makes life easier for IT users. In fact, you can get a free trial of Jamf Pro. But if you use Jamf Now, you can use it for the first three devices, enough for my kids, free forever. Free forever. So this is a great family solution, right? Jamf Now. And then once you get how great it is, bring it to your work. Jamf.com/MacBreak. JAMF.com/MacBreak. Mac Break. Love having kind of the legendary Jamf team be part of our show. That's nice. One of the greats in the Apple business. Let's see. Let's talk about the planet of the apps. We've been hearing about this. This is a show. You could guess it's a reality based show.
Shark Tank for apps.
Shark Tape, sort of Shark Tanky. It was created by Will.i.am and brought to the networks. And somebody said, "Hey, you know, you really ought to take this to Eddie and see if Eddie's interested. Maybe Apple would want to do this." And they did. The weird thing is, you present your app to Jessica Alba. Yes, Jessica Alba. She's got she's an entrepreneur. She's got a really big business with her. What is it? Honest.
Yep.
Will.i.am, and I don't know how Gwyneth Paltrow fits in the mix, but
she has a company, Gloop, or I forget what it's.
Oh, Gloop. That's her company. Yeah. That's right. Anyway, okay, good. And you know, I feel really bad.
I think was building Blackberries in the bowels of Waterloo.
I feel terrible for Gary Vaynerchuk, because look at this picture again. This is the planet of the apps, and they mention Jessica Alba, Gwyneth Paltrow, Will.i.am, but there's a fourth judge. They even cut him off in the picture. That's Gary V. Cut off.
How dare they?
We don't mention Gary V. Who's Gary? Nobody knows Gary V. Gary, I'm so sorry. That sucks. But at least Gary got to sit next to Gwyneth Paltrow. I bet she smells great. She probably smells like apples.
She has Iron Man armor. I wouldn't mess with her.
That's right. It's Pepper Potts and the Invisible Woman on the same panel. What's Will.i.am doing there?
Yeah.
What superpower does he have?
Yeah, what's Will.i.am's superpower? His superpower is his gold superpower, boots, baby.
His superpower is the ability to take a to take a DeLorean and make it even uglier.
I love it that Will.i.am seems to be wearing... Are those AirPods? No, they've got wires. Are they Apple earbuds? No.
Are they Beat X?
Are they Beats? Maybe they're Beats X. Yeah, I'm sure that somebody at Apple would prevent him from wearing a competitor's.
Eddie ran up. No!
No! Apparently, instead of an elevator pitch... Oh, this sounds terrible. Developers and entrepreneurs make an escalator pitch. Literally. They're on an escalator.
The reaction to this show from people in our community must be what the reaction to Cooks had to, like, Hell's Kitchen.
Success
requires
work.
It's finally our turn.
This is an ad for BMW. Are they gonna show me? Because there's a trailer for the show, right?
YouTube.com/Apple.
Of course. Of course. And I am a YouTube Red subscriber. I shouldn't have to watch ads. Here we go.
Work to earn millions of
oh, this is Recode. No. Let me go to YouTube.com/Apple. That's why there was an ad on it. This is Recode's.
They recoded the trailer.
What is this? YouTube.com/Apple does not work. I get a pitch for Apple TV.
Oh, no.
Sign in on your
app.
Thank you, Planet. What if you were able to find exactly the news story you wanted at its original source? Well, my startup has an idea.
Here we go. Planet of the Apps. Well, let me unmute.
Every episode, app developers work to earn millions of dollars.
Millions.
Venture capital investment.
Because it's not a reality show if you don't have a British accent.
Four of the world's most culturally influential entrepreneurs. Will.i.am.
Developers, they're the rock stars of right now.
Jessica Alba.
I have that gut and that intuition, and so far, it's been right.
Gary Vaynerchuk.
You've actually completely sold me on the tech advantage.
And Gwyneth Paltrow.
As consumers of news, we have a real trust issue.
The developers have just 60 seconds on the escalator to get one of our advisors interested in their idea.
High concept.
You read a pitch. Are you excited?
I'm so excited. Everything we've done all comes down to this.
And we're like it's on the Apple for the Snapchat generation.
We're going to revolutionize social media.
Please explain that.
Some will be denied.
I see the person that can design it, but who's going to build the business? Dude.
Those selected by an advisor partner with the best in the business.
Olivia knows through AI best day and time to buy groceries.
I need this.
This is a branding game. I'm the branding person for
you.
Really?
Yes, really.
Last time I know, my brand is known all over the earth.
I'm going to go with Will.
Because I got gold shoes on.
That's what's up.
Now work with their advisors.
You guys got a lot of work to do.
This isn't the pitch anymore. This is real life.
And tech luminaries from companies like Yelp, Musical.ly, and Uber.
make pivots that kind of make sense Uber? To that user base you have right now.
It all leads to a final pitch with one of the hottest venture capital firms on the planet, Lightspeed Venture Partners.
Are you nervous?
There's $10 million at stake.
What's your burn rate right now?
How you're planning to acquire customers?
It's just not big enough.
I truly believe in this.
There's a big opportunity here.
Oh my God, I'm crying.
Successful apps earn featured placement on the App Store, making their apps available to millions of people.
This is the biggest opportunity in my life.
Planet of the Apps. Watch the journey unfold on Apple Music.
So here, by the way, only on Apple. You can only get it from Apple Music, interestingly, on iTunes. Here's the problem I see with that. The audience that would be interested in apps, like our audience, doesn't want that presentation. The audience that's interested in reality TV wants The Bachelor. They don't want this. I think it's two different audiences.
Yeah, I think the first one, absolutely. The second one, I think we'll have to wait and see. Like that would be my gut, but I've been proven wrong with those kinds of guesses so many times.
Well,
I'm pretty sure our audience won't like it.
I'm sorry.
I don't know if the mainstream Apple Music audience will take to it or not.
You're talking about the other one, the Carpool Karaoke is being.
No, both. Like I think, you know, when you look at TV and the person who made this show, I forget his name, Silverman, he's made tons of these shows. He's brought a lot of the ones from England over and he's produced a lot of them. Like they went through his credentials last night on Rico and it's like 10 or 20 of the most famous reality shows ever. And he's doing a version of that for apps like they did for cooking and dancing and tattooing and all these sorts of things. And it seems like there's an endless appetite for that stuff. So I'm absolutely sure that many people in our industry will not want to give this the time of day. I just don't know how many people will find it interesting in the larger reality TV audience.
Yeah, also, people haven't been trained to go to Apple Music for a TV show. So how many people are going to they have to be really motivated to watch this and stick with it. Carpool Karaoke, at least it's music connected. And also, there's nothing I saw in that trailer that made me think they were doing anything special that was any different from the one where you're the Food Network show where you're pitching food products and the other. It's and also Shark Tank is the successful model for the show, and it kind of stinks. It's like the way that it
yeah, but it's totally successful. I mean,
I don't like any reality shows. So
yeah, we're the wrong. But that's kind of my point, is that the people who are interested in this are probably not the same audience, and people who like reality shows. This is too. They don't care about apps.
Unless they have an app idea, Leo. Unless they have an app all-star idea.
I mean, I guess the one argument you could make is that everybody's interested in making $22 billion from Facebook on their app. So because such big money's been thrown around, $22 billion for WhatsApp, $1 billion for Instagram, so much big money was being thrown around. I don't see it being thrown around now, but maybe there's some interest. Like I could make it rich. I know a lot. I do people. Okay, maybe I'm wrong because now that I think of it, people are always calling me on the radio show or coming up to me saying, "I've got an idea for an app. I know it's going to be the best
will
thing
this
ever."
Be a compelling show. That's the question. Yeah. Like, will people actually like? Will this version of maybe an app show could be successful? I don't know if this will be a successful app show.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder if it wouldn't have been better to start off by producing just an hour-long self-contained documentary sort of thing. Just like Indie Game, the movie, this really great documentary that came out 2 or 3 years ago that followed three different developers who are creating independent games. I think they were going to be launching on Xbox Live and Steam. And you see three different stories about exactly how hard it is to put these things together and also how to market them and how to make a living off of these things. And that was a self-contained story that people would tune into because it's sort of interesting and new. But you wind up sitting there for a full 90 minutes engrossed trying to figure out who's going to win, who's going to lose. And then maybe off of that, you create a show that kind of bounces off that. Like I just don't see – I don't understand why they picked this topic as their first real show.
I mean, there have been geek documentaries. I mean, there have been lots of them. I'm thinking of Zero Days. There was that one on 3D printing. What was it called? Print the Legend.
Yeah.
I don't think they're big mainstream productions. The geeks who watch them, or the show you're mentioning, are fascinating. I mean, these are fascinating.
They're proper documentaries. They're not when you're pitching for capitalization, you don't go into this beautiful lit set,
right?
And you're not told to stand on the X where the scene for the trapdoors is, because each of them has a special iPad, and you get 5 minutes. I think it was a couple years
Reed ago. Pettis was ready to show his 3D printer to the world. Something terrible happened.
Someone from Google Ventures was talking about how Shark Tank has absolutely ruined his job.
Oh, yeah, because everybody thinks that's what VCs do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like people basically come in to give like a 30-second advertisement to sell them a $5 copy of their product, as opposed to, no, we don't care about your product. We care about your books.
Right.
Yeah, it's my thinking is, or at least, people are going to go to Apple Music, and one of the problems Apple Music solves is boredom. Like, you just want to hear something, listen to something, see something. And Apple's going to have a new movies and TV shows section. It doesn't look like this will be alone. There'll be carpool karaoke and other things, and they're probably really high profile music videos to get people into the section. And then they might see Will.i.am, or they might see Jessica Alba or Gwyneth Paltrow. And that's probably why they went with stars rather than, you know, like existing venture capitalist types, because no one would recognize them and it wouldn't compel people to click into it.
Right.
And then once they do, then the show has to either carry them or lose them on their own weight. But I think they're making a big deal yesterday about Apple Music having 20 million subscribers over 100 countries. And that's a built-in audience. Whether they can convert that audience or not is a separate question. But I think this is part of what you have to do to make Apple Music as successful is the same thing as Netflix. You have to get a lot of interesting content that makes people want to keep subscribing month after month. And music alone against Spotify and other companies isn't significantly differentiated. But this kind of content has a chance at doing that.
Here's the carpool karaoke trailer. This one I'm a little more interested in. Listen to some music. It's James Corden invented this, but he's producing it, right? But I don't think he's in it.
He's in some of them. He's in a couple of them.
This is Carpool Karaoke. It's getting like 350,000 views an hour.
It's all been building to this. Carpool Karaoke without James Corden.
Okay, so Alicia Keys and John Legend. John's doing the driving. Don't know who the... Well, Michael Strahan on the left. Don't know who that is. Okay, I've just exhausted my popular music knowledge. Wait a minute, that's Seth MacFarlane.
MacFarlane.
Cannot sing. Metallica!
Like a diamond, it's not that hard. Shine bright like a diamond. Now this is a story all about how...
Oh, no, see, I'd watch that.
I love that Will Smith is...
I would watch Will Smith do Parents Just Don't Understand.
Yes.
And I'm so happy. Old white women think I'm Pharrell sometimes.
Really?
When he wears that hat, he looks a lot like Pharrell.
We need a bigger car.
No.
Oh, Shaq, don't drive. Oh, man.
Jiggy with it.
Jiggy with it. This looks like fun. You know what? This looks like a great show.
Yeah. I love that. What I love about James Corden is that it really is, it takes people out of their element and it makes them open to having real conversations.
It's Garth Brooks and Chelsea Handler.
Carpool Karaoke.
That looks like fun.
Next level.
Oh, carp. Helicopter pool.
Helicopter pool.
Karaoke.
I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night.
See, Corden really makes it. Corden's so good because, you know, that's a lot of the... So there you go. There's the interface if you want to see it, because they put it in the promo. So I guess you're going to have a TV and movie section, browse, and then, when you're browsing in Apple Music, there'll be new music, created playlists, and TV and movies. Look at that. And then you go into TV and movies, and right now there's only two of them. But maybe there'll be more.
Movies? Are the movies?
Yeah, what are the movies? Oh, you know, they could have... They, you know what? Bring back Behind the Music. I would watch that.
Yeah.
There's stuff they could do. Great,
totally.
You know, put Woodstock and The Last Waltz, great concert movies. There's stuff they could do that would tie with music very nicely. I think the interesting thing about Carpool Karaoke is it's a song as well as the video of them.
Yeah. I mean, that is a great opportunity. ESPN has done amazing work in their 30 for 30 series, where yes. it is a legitimate documentary series that talks about the history of sports, and none of these movies would be out of place on PBS. Yeah. And in terms of the amount of seriousness that they bring, sometimes to serious concepts, sometimes to the funnier sort of bits of sports history. Apple could do the same thing by documenting music. If they just funded, we're going to do a 12-part series on the history of hip hop that makes sure that tells it from the perspective, not from as a marketing phenomenon of here's where it started and here are the people who are still telling the story. That could be a valuable thing to be added. They need to once they get their first, just like Netflix and Hulu, the first time that they get nominated for an Emmy and they beat quote real programming unquote, that's the time when things start to really kick into higher gear, because that's when the greatest writers, the greatest directors, the greatest actors decide that get me an Apple deal. I don't want a CBS deal anymore. I want an Apple deal.
By the way, the guy I'm now being informed, but the guy sitting next to Michael Strahan, NFL legend Michael Strahan, was NASCAR legend number 21 Jeff Gordon. So. I should have recognized him. I just, without the helmet and the fire suit, I just didn't know.
Could have been the Stig. We don't know.
Could have been the Stig. No, of course it was Jeff Gordon. He's a good looking fella. Good looking fella. Apple has hired Amazon's Fire TV head to run Apple TV. That sounds to me like Apple TV is going to be a lot like Roku and Fire TV, which it already is. It doesn't sound like a change for Apple TV, but...
I think the bigger story here is Apple's continual reorganization. Like shortly after Phil Schiller took over the App Store, Greg Joswiak took over much broader responsibilities for product marketing. And now you have Pete Dystedt, who's leaving Joz's organization and going to Eddie Q's organization to help out with contact negotiations. And you have Tim, I'm going to mispronounce his last name, Trudell. I don't know how to say it, but he's coming in to work on the marketing. And you have these senior vice presidents at Apple who are phenomenal people, but whose portfolios have just grown and grown and grown and grown and grown and grown as new products and new services get launched. And you need really good vice presidents to help out the senior vice presidents. And I think we're seeing that now, because Eddie Q has been responsible for not just everything iTunes, but everything Apple Music, all the contract negotiations, the servers. It's a stunning portfolio. And the same thing with Phil Schiller. And as you move all these people into different positions, I think that helps them. I was joking and saying, they have so much on their plates, they haven't seen their plates in a decade. But I think this helps take some of that off of them.
Speaking of Eddie Q, interview with The Verge, he says, this is interesting, Apple is not against the idea of making more original TV, but emphasized there'd have to be some sort of interactive element for it to make sense. So already,
even MTV model.
Even though it's not out yet, they're already saying, well, we might make more, but we want to make it more interactive. He says he could see a TV environment where content makers are creating a more interactive TV app. But this reminds me so much of the kinds of conversations we had in the 90s, and where viewers watch the program on their Apple TV, iPad, or phone using the remote or simply touch screen to interact with a show. Good Lord, Eddie. Haven't we come a little farther than that? It's not what Jimmy Iovine told the New York Times yesterday. He said Apple's working to bring more scripted dramas to its platform.
They explained a lot of that on stage yesterday, and it was interesting because they used the model of MTV, where it started off with music videos, but it got further afield. And there's going to be just a more television-like experience in the Apple Music app, but you'll also be able to get the Planet of the Apps app. And it'll have the show, but you can – I forget how they explained it. You'll be able to tap your way – almost like DVD extras into like a digression, I guess, and keep going through that as much as interesting, and then back out into the show again.
Interactive TV is one of the oldest ideas in the convergence sphere. Was a flop. It's been a flop time and time again. I think that Eddie, you're going to have to come up with something a little bit better than that if you want to make it here. That makes no sense at all. Interactive. Even the most people want to do is watch Twitter when, like, they're watching the Grammys. That was fun, right? That's about it. I don't want to sit here with my TV remote or watching and doing.
There has to be an element that is intrinsically of interactivity. You can't just simply say that I don't want to, I'm so engrossed in this new reality TV show that I even want a second screen in my lap to continue. My joy is so great. It cannot be contained by just one screen. I don't think that any show has really done that. Either you're so engrossed in it that you just want to follow the characters and see what's going on, or you're so bored that you need something of your own choosing to fill up the 20% of your brain that would just rather change the channel.
Yeah.
That I don't get it.
Somebody's pointing out, you know, Leo, you have a chat room and you have 500 to 1,000 people in the chat room while you're doing your shows. That's kind of like interactive TV, but that works to me. But you're not like clicking on my head.
We're having a conversation.
Maybe they are.
It's a conversation with 10,000 people and 3 microphones, and we just happen to have the microphones in front of us, but we're also looking at what other people are saying.
Well, and I think that's what, to me, that's kind of a good interaction. That means it's a larger conversation as opposed to, you know, dopey pop-up video trivia questions that you click while you're watching.
Yeah, Carpool. I don't think it's that. I think it's more like DVD extras, where if you're interested in one of the apps being presented, you could click through to it. And
biggest loss when physical media went away, DVD extras. I love director's commentaries and stuff.
Oh,
and
same.
The Apple TV, you know, when you buy it on Apple TV and they have extras, it's very scant. It's some of the things.
They're anemic,
You know what? You know why? I think I know why. Because I've talked to people who say, we hate doing DVD extras. I finished the movie years ago. I do not want to record a commentary track. Like, it's impossible to get people to do those. It's impossible, you know, the outtakes, whatever. So they're Apple, without this pressure that the movie companies, when Sony was making its DVD, was able to pressure people into doing this. With absent that, it's going to be very hard to get extras, which is too bad.
Also, apparently, there's a lot of like brokering where Target will get this exclusive extra, and Walmart will get that exclusive extra, and iTunes will get this.
Right.
You don't get all of them anymore.
We talked about it before. The remastered Godfather 1, 2, and 3 Blu-rays with Francis Ford Coppola's commentary on Godfather 1. Frankly, not having that is a loss. That's a huge loss to movie cinephiles, movie lovers.
Yeah, that's a great loss with particularly with Laserdisc, where there, because Laserdisc was such a high, it's not for rental, it's for really for cinephiles. And so there was enough, because they're going to be charging $200 for the deluxe edition of The Abyss, there was money to we're going to reshoot that last scene that we didn't have enough money to actually do the special effects properly for that one. Right. We're going to restore it to the original premiere cut. And also, we're going to fund interviews with all the principals at a distance from the production where they can say the words James Cameron without twitching, and they can talk about it like in context. And so they leave behind this wonderful historical document. I think part of the necessity, though, is that you have to pay these people for their participation, they don't pay these people. And that's why they're like, well, you're going to be adding a bonus to this. That's going to make this sell more. Why are you promising to send me a copy of it? And then, of course, you don't even follow through and send me the free copy.
Gosh, you know, getting Seth MacFarlane in to comment on a movie after he makes it, it really adds. I don't know why I thought of him, but Apple's ads. We've talked about the portrait mode. They've got one now to close your rings.
They have a Petrit mode ad now.
Petrit?
Portrait mode for pets.
Oh, really? Now I thought I thought it was supposed to have a human. It works with pets?
It does facial recognition. They will only officially say that it's optimized for humans, although people have found that it works very well with pets. And I've extended that to coffee cups and things too, Leo.
So you can do it. You can do it with other.
That's the difference between a photo of your dog and one of your best friends. Housemate, soulmate.
Wow, that's interesting. They're really selling this. It is a huge differentiator on the iPhone 7.
It blew up. I mean, pet photographs with portrait mode. If you look at Instagram or something,
they're everywhere.
It became huge. Yeah.
They're smart. Here's some, as long as we're talking ads, I like playing ads. Here's, you know, it's carnival time. Here's their carnival ad from Brazil. Huh. And these are all portrait mode as well, aren't they? Yeah.
Yep.
That's fun. Now, is this for Brazil or is this going to be shown in the U.S.? I haven't seen it yet.
I didn't ask.
It's fun. What a fun ad. So it's all music, so people listening are only hearing great music, but It's a bunch of people in costume for Carnival in Apple portrait mode, but they're doing them very fast. So it's almost like a moving picture.
Stop motion.
It's really great and very colorful. And they could show this in the U.S., absolutely. Even though it's...
I think they're showing that it can't be bamboozled no matter how weird the costumes are.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's like the pet ad to say, well, you know, portrait works in a variety of ways. These are just legs.
It's so sad I didn't think of doing this.
I love portrait mode. It's not just for the pictures it takes, but just the idea that we're gonna launch this feature in a way that it will work, but we'll make it smarter and better as time goes on.
Yeah.
So that we will make sure that it will understand non-human faces, and soon we will figure out how to make sure that if you just have arbitrary object in the foreground, it can still resolve that from the background.
Well, remember when they announced it, when Phil Schiller was talking about it in September, it wasn't out yet. And he said, you know, it wasn't even something that they had planned to make. Some engineers came to him and said, hey, you know, we could do this thing. Should we work on it? And he said, yeah. And then when they, you know, it's kind of in beta. It's gotten better, I guess. Has it gotten better? Have they actually improved
it? Does all the time. It's one of those features where Apple like takes in a bunch of data and it constantly works on improving it.
That's one of my
favorite things about Apple. It's like they do have features pushed down from marketing that they think is important for the phones to have. But a lot of the biggest features we've gotten over the last few years have been one engineer or a couple engineers thinking up an idea, pitching it, having it approved, and then making it a reality. And that's led to so many of the things we take for granted now. And I think that's one of the things that Apple does really well is nurturing those individual ideas.
And very likely one of those ideas it's getting nurtured big time because Tim Cook keeps saying it, augmented reality. And now he gave it an interview to the UK newspaper, The Independent, which is, of course, behind a paywall, I think, but in which he says that AR is more than just something we're really interested in, but a fundamental technology. I regard it, says Cook, as a big idea, like the smartphone. The smartphone's for everyone. We don't have to think the iPhone is about a certain demographic or country or vertical market. It's for everyone. I think AR is that big. It's huge. I get excited because of the things that could be done to improve a lot of lives and be entertaining. He goes on to say that he views AR like the silicon used in iPhone's chips. It's not a technology per se, but a core, not a product, but a core technology, which implies it will appear in a variety of ways in Apple products.
Yep.
And yep. I couldn't agree with him more. He said he was on Good Morning America. He said it had more potential in virtual reality because you remain present in the real world. Exactly. So, you know, clearly Tim Cook is getting people ready. This is definitely something. Do you think this year?
It's just odd that, I mean, Tim Cook, Apple is famously so secretive about things, but I think there's just so much momentum behind AI and AR that
why is he going public with this? I mean, this is a clearly calculated plan. This isn't like, by the way, let me mention AR. This is something they've thought about. Why?
I think it's because it allows them to reassure people that this is definitely on our radar and we are working on something without having to commit to anything, without having to show off a flaky beta, without letting people see that, actually the version we have right now requires a RoboCop style backpack that leads to tethers to a golf cart full of electronics to make it work. It might make people like me nervous when there is such excitement about a certain technology that this looks like it's becoming a real thing and not just a demo. But Apple does not comment on unannounced products. They never show off prototypes. There is never a rumor about them showing off something to people behind the scenes at a trade show. It's a way for them to put that piece on their chessboard without taking their finger off, so they can take that piece back.
Here's a story from our friend Steve Kovac in Business Insider. Apple has suspended, he says, he's heard this from a number of sources, its new 5K monitor from LG. They're not going to sell it at the store. According to Steve, Apple stores are showing it but will not sell it to you. Our source, he says Apple Store employees were instructed this weekend to continue to display the LG monitors on the show floor but not sell them. If a customer wants one, instead, customers will be told to order the display from the Apple online store. So that sounds like because we had mentioned last week that they're going to put shielding in these 5K monitors.
Yeah, they don't want old stock to get
it's the old stock in the store, but if you were to buy one now, online, you would
get... It says 3 to 4 week shipping, so my guess is that's the buffer they need to get you
installed. Okay. What are you going to do about yours? You don't have a problem.
I don't know. No, I mean, where I keep mine, normally I have no problem because it's way across the room, yeah. So I have absolutely no issue. But just the idea of having to either dig into this myself or take it to LG just fills me with dread. That's what I buy from Apple, so I don't have to deal with those kinds of things. So
right.
This is another pile, another piece in my not happy that Apple didn't make their own display pile, which is getting considerably larger.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a hard thing because people are like, Apple should make their own display. And then you say, well, that you want your iMac this year. And then they start to go,
yeah. All right. Let's take a break and get your picks coming up next as we continue. Mac Break Weekly. Somebody in the chat room said, should be Apple Break Weekly. Do we have any Mac news at all? No.
That is, we should have like a countdown. We should have like a digital clock, or we could even write it in the back, say number of days since meaningful Macintosh news, and just to have a like sort of a pointed reminder that Apple is not showing a whole lot of love for Macintosh.
Right. And I don't like the name Apple Break Weekly. we called it Mac Break Weekly. How long has it been? 10 years ago when we started it. It was a video. It was Mac Break originally, video from Alex Lindsay. And then Alex was doing the video. And I said, well, why don't we do a podcast we call Mac Break Weekly? Because Mac Break would come out, you know, a kind of odd schedule. Sometimes it'd be a long delay. Sometimes it'd be a bunch of them. And he said, yeah, let's do an audio podcast, Mac Break Weekly. It's since become a video podcast. Yeah. But it never was only Macintosh. It was
can we point out that, like, John Siracusa, nobody puts him on point about saying that I think this is an absolutely a deliberate tech podcast at this point. But no, he gets to still call it the Accidental Tech Podcast.
It's just a name, kids.
It works. We don't have to remake the T-shirts.
Yeah, we don't want to remake this. Exactly. When we started doing this show, January, which was, by the way, January 27th, 2006... there was no iPhone. There was no Apple Watch. There was no Apple TV. It was about Macs because that's all Apple did. Oh, I guess they had an iPod. You know, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about.
It wasn't a day's worth of iPod news every week.
Yeah. And what are you going to say about the iPod? So I'm glad Apple has more to talk about, frankly. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If you are in the market for a new house, I want to tell you about how you're going to get your next mortgage. You're going to get it fast. You're going to get it easy. You're going to get it completely online. You're going to get it from Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. It was designed for the geeks in all of us. I mean, if you're one of those people who really likes going to a bank or a mortgage lender, hat in hand, with a box of paperwork, you know, faxing stuff, if you really like that, okay. Actually, I think you could still do that at Quicken Loans if you really wanted to. But wouldn't you want to just kind of be on the couch, take your iPhone, your iPad, even you can do it at the computer, and just do everything you need right there, like instantly, even submit pay stubs and bank statements, just boom, like that. And then if you want, play with the rate and length of your loan in real time, and then say, good, let's go for that and get approved in minutes. Wouldn't you like that? Wouldn't that be better? Sure, a lot better than the last time I bought a house. If you're refiing, same thing. And Quicken Loans is the best mortgage lender in the country. And if you just look at all those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards they've received year after year after year, you'll know people love them. Why don't you try it? QuickenLoans.com/MacBreak. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online with Rocket Mortgage. QuickenLoans.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030, quickenloans.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Andy Iannocco, you got a pick of the week for us?
I got a simple pick of the week. I went to the Apple campus for the first time since they remodeled the Apple company store there, which is the on-campus store. They took out most of the really fun merchandise. You can no longer get bags. You can no longer get like mugs. It's basically, if you don't want to buy an iPad, it's either T-shirts and a good selection of T-shirts, a hardback notepad, or the Apple logoed pen. And of course, I just wanted to have respect in the eyes of Renee again. I finally own a rose gold Apple device. And wow. I'm pointing this out for a couple of reasons. Now, number one, if you do go to the Apple Company store, this is probably, in my opinion, it's the coolest thing they've got. They also have to my shock and delight, Apple T-shirts with the original six-color logo. But unfortunately, they're not like they're for people with physiques. Because it's like that sort of thin, like engineered material that's designed
top, right?
to like, yeah. well, mm-hmm. they're t-shirts, but they're designed to be like worn close to the body. They're not designed. They don't look good with like salsa stains on them. So I gave that a pass. But this is, I think, the coolest thing have. And it's partly my pick of the week, but also because this isn't like a Johnny Ive, like Apple designed pen. These pens are really, really nice. And they're made by a company called Retro 1951. It's the Retro 1951 Tornado.
Ooh.
And these are really lovely pens. Mm. They are full metal. They have a really good heft to them. They're rollerballs. You deploy them by twisting this knurled grip at the other end of it. They write really, really nicely. Unlike the Apple Pencil, they actually have an integrated clip, so you can actually carry them around with you. And they're $20. I mean, so it's enough that you can certainly afford to have one. But they're also nice enough that this is kind of a really nice little gift to give people. Because there are times where I would like to give someone I know that someone would like to have a nice pen, but you don't want to give them like the $800 rote ring or they're so intimidating and they're fussy to use. This is like just a really nice refillable rollerball pen that has a bit of style to it. If you buy it off the site and not the Apple, the Apple versions at the Apple store, they come in all of the like Apple hardware colors, so you can get them in space gray, you can get them in silver and rose gold. If you get the actual Retro 1951, the classic lacquers are available in about a dozen different colors. You can buy them on Amazon for about $20.
Glow in the dark skeletons.
They're nice. They're nicely packaged, so that looks like you're giving or getting a nice gift. So I recommend it highly. I bought this because I wanted to get some souvenir from the Apple Store since I hadn't been there in like a year and a half, 2 years. But now it's actually like my daily driver pen. I've actually bought off of Amazon like a second one, so that I don't have to. So I keep my rose gold in pristine condition. So if I want to sell it on Gazelle 2 years from now, I can get at least $28 back on it.
This is, I like this. I've never seen these, and I'm a big pen fan. They also have a Harley-Davidson line. This is their bamboo pen. These are nice. Yep.
They also make one that's a stylus on one end and a pen on the other.
Mm.
So you can still call it a technical device.
Yeah. It's retro51.com, the Tornado. And they have fountain pens as well as rollerballs. Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week, it was just announced earlier today, and it's called Project Phoenix. It does not refer to the legendary X-Men Child of Light and Darkness, but to a project where the Icon Factory, the legendary Icon Factory, wants to bring Twitterific updated and back to the Mac. They want to rebirth it. They want to
resurrect it. Oh, I love Twitterific. Yay.
It's phenomenal. It was the first Twitter client. I mean, the Icon Factory has contributed so much to Twitter culture, including the bird, half the language that's used around it. And, you know, they've been doing the iPhone client for a long time, but the Mac client has sort of languished a little bit because they didn't have the ability to do everything at once. And it's an uncertain market. You never know what's going to happen with Twitter and developers. So they're taking a different approach. Instead of essentially making it as an internal spec and hoping that it sells, they're crowdfunding it. So you can go to Kickstarter and you can pledge towards Twitterific. So $15 will get you the app. $30 will get you the app and, you know, some goodies. And you can go all the way up. There's like their pledge is like $1,000 that gets you a hand-painted and signed Ollie, which is the name of their little bird mascot. And I believe if you pledge more than that, you actually get to have shots with Craig Hockenberry at WWDC. Don't quote me on that, but it's a wonderful Twitter client. It's storied, it's lineaged, it is iconic. Forgive the pun on the name, and it's great to have these alternative apps out there. And I think if they can do this through a crowdfunding approach where they don't have to, you know, bet the company every time they want to do an app update, more power to them. So I backed the bejesus out of it earlier today. And if anybody knows and loves Twitterific the way I do, I think it's probably an Insta backing for you.
What are they doing about the fact, you know, the limitation of the API?
So they have a list here. They have a list of the features that you'll get in the first version. Then they have two sort of stretch goal sets of features. And then they explain that there's some things they just can't do because of the API. So it's all sort of laid out for you there in the bullet points.
I guess they're grandfathered into the number of users, though.
Tokens, yeah. They have a pretty substantial number of tokens
since they were one of the very first.
Yeah.
All right, this I've been talking about this on the show, and I finally got my June oven. This is the oven that works with an iPhone app. And it's, first of all, I'm just going to say right up front, it's ridiculously expensive. Don't buy it. $1,500. However, if you should inherit $1,500 from a long-lost aunt... that
we should note to all current and prospective advertisers that this is not an ad.
This is not an ad. Yeah, no, we don't ever do that.
We will happily read the ad copy that you provide. As we
But I gotta say, and I wasn't gonna buy it. In fact, I put the $100 deposit down, and then I got a note saying, "Okay, we kick over the rest, and we will send it to you." And I didn't. And then Stacey Higginbotham on This Week in Google said, "Oh, you really should get it." And then they said they have a hundred day return policy. I thought. All right, and I saved all the packing material. I was very careful. You know what? Both Lisa and I have fallen in love with this thing. Mostly we've cooked salmon and chicken, you know, kind of things you would normally cook in an oven. But it does do toast. It does, and the iPhone app will notify you when it's almost done. When it's done, it tells you all. Actually, I should show you the app because it's hysterical. Even here, I can connect to the oven remotely, and I can see, like it's connecting to my oven. I can see the history of things I've cooked, and you can even watch a video of the things you cooked. At any time, you can look in your oven and see, because it's got a camera in the oven. At any time, you can... I know, it's stupid. Anytime...
No, I'm just thinking about the history feature where you're watching yourself, like you're reheating like three-day-old casserole. Saying, like, let's go back to that time where I baked that ginger cake.
Those were the good old days. Yeah, look at my salmon steaks. They're cooking. They're cooking in the June, and so you
can. Can you please tell me that you can Instagram straight from that?
You can. You can share your meal, and you can see it cooking while it's cooking. But this is also a time lapse after the fact, and you even see like a graph. This is the temperature of the oven, and the oven's smart. In fact, it gets firmware updates and gets smarter all the time. So it does it because it has broiler. It's got carbon fiber elements broiler. Convection oven. It's got two fans in it. It's got a temperature probe, so it knows what the temperature of the salmon. You see a steady growth there to the, and then it tells you it's done until you know, not based on time, but on the internal temperature of the
based on doneness alone.
It, by the way, it's a great way to toast. Here's some bread being toasted. I've got a video of it.
Convection.
So one of my favorite interactivity designers, Chris Clarko, worked on this. He was at Fitbit.
Oh, really?
He was at Square. Yeah, and he did a lot of interactivity design for this, and it's nice to see it out on the market.
It's ironically, you know, it's got a 5-inch screen on the oven, which is like a smartphone, and it actually is running Android because, and this is another hazard, on day two of my oven ownership, I went to go cook some salmon, and the oven was in a boot loop.
Was it tweeting?
June, and then it would crash. And then June, and it would crash. So I contacted them on the website. They have a little chat. And there was somebody there, thank goodness, because Lisa said, you better turn on the real oven. I said, no, this is going to work. And she told me how to reboot and reset it. So you plug it in and hold down the big button on the front. And I see the Android boot manager. And clear the cache, clear the data, reset it, and it works fine now. And I haven't had any problems since then. But that was a little weird. That's one of the things that can kind of happen when you have a computerized oven. It's on the internet. It's on my Wi-Fi, and it does a great job. And the thing is, it's kind of set it. For instance, you put the salmon steaks in there, and it recognizes it. It says, "Is that salmon? Yeah, it's salmon." Okay, how would you like it? Firm or a little more rare? And you tell it, and then you walk away. It tails the whole thing. It broils it for a little bit to get it crispy. Does the whole thing. You can bake in it. You can brown things. Don't buy it. It's too expensive. But if Aunt Jane dies and gives you $1,500, it is actually the best toaster oven.
You heat up your Lofter Thermidor that Alfred made for you while you were crime fighting.
Batman needs this oven for sure.
I also say that it's like the end of the financial year. And you've got like $3,000 left in the budget. If you don't spend it, you're going to have your budget
cut. There you go.
hell of an upgrade for the break room. I will endorse, though, getting an oven like that. I did over the past year, I've switched exclusively to using my little countertop oven for all my baking, like all my pies, all my cakes. I still do cookies in the main oven, but I find that those small ovens, they come to heat a lot quicker. They're a lot more even.
It's not, more efficient, certainly.
I actually did like half of my run of ginger cakes on that on my desktop oven. Maybe I should buy a second one, put it like right here next to the computer so that I can keep, I wouldn't have to keep checking a phone app. I could just, you know, keep checking on my,
when are they making a coffee roaster is my only question.
The people came here came from Netflix, right? And Fitbit. I mean, it's the pedigree's
there's
good.
A lot of great ideas. And I shouldn't be laughing. It's just,
the price is a little.
But I got to admit that having an actual camera that can actually, you can peek at what you're doing without opening the door and losing convection, because I'm usually doing baking, so I can't see through the front. I have to look at the top to see like if the cake has started to pull away from the sides of the pan or whatever.
You can bake pizza here. A 12-inch pizza will fit. It's a pretty big oven. Watch this. This is the one that's going to get Andy. You can make breakfast in your June oven. Watch this video. This is you start by making. I don't understand how video works. You make the bacon first, okay, in your June oven. Okay, so you got a little bacon. It's got a little pan. You put that in there. You tell it. See, it knew it was bacon. Did you see that?
Yeah.
It knows it's bacon. You say crispy. Then you you keep it on because you're going to put an egg. I would never do this, by the way. An egg on the pan. And it's going to fry it. And you put, why not? You know what? Let's make an egg McMuffin. You put a muffin on there, put it back in the oven, and then you watch it on TV.
That's maybe the hardest way to make the easiest.
I know. Don't ever do this at home. But this is they have a whole Facebook page with all sorts of crazy stuff like this. And there you go.
I love that image recognition feature where it says, oh, I see you're making bacon.
That is kind of cool.
Go. Yeah.
And then recipes, I guess, get updated. So because it's always on the internet, so it's always checking.
After 1,000 eggs, they know that it takes an extra second and one degree of variance.
So the more people that own this, the better my oven will work.
Yes.
I don't know. You know what? I told Lisa, look, we're going to send it back. I'm saving all the packaging. Let's just try it and see. And now she won't let me send it back. She says, no, this is actually really cool. So there you go.
Forget filling your fitness rings. Fill your oven rings.
Yes. There should be some sort of sharing thing.
Like yes. Bundt cake.
Well, it's funny because the recognition, almost no matter what I put in, I put a piece of toast. It says that's either toast or strudel. I put in salmon steak. It's either salmon or strudel. Almost everything, it's something or strudel. And I don't, are there a lot of people baking strudel? Or
maybe it wants to make strudel. It
wants to make strudel. My oven is asking for strudel.
And spetzel. Strudel and spetzel.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's enough of that. Thank you so much for being here with me. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Follow Renee there and on the Twitter, RENERITCHIE. And I see you want to say something about your new podcast.
Do I? Let's quickly think. We had Jason Sinella on this week. Talking
about,
yeah, how Apple got to the Apple TV that they shipped and what they could do with it in 2017.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Apple Talk, it's wonderful. You can find it at imore.com. Look in the podcast section. Andy Iannacco does a few shows as well. My God, the man is prolific. Not only does he write for the Chicago Sun-Times, but he does shows on Relay.fm. And here as well every week.
Great thing about the internet is that it turns out that they can't make you shut up.
They have no power to stop you. I am powerless.
Lord knows they try.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Renee. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. You can watch live on twit.tv/live or youtube.com/twit. We're on YouTube Live. Or on Ustream. The site can't be reached. YouTube is down. Oh, no. You clicked too fast. I think that's what it was. If you want to be in the studio, we had a couple of nice guys in the studio today. We would love to have you. Just email tickets at twit.tv so we make some room for you. Shuttle some gear out of the way to give you somewhere to sit. You can also get everything we do after the fact on demand by just going to twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/MBW, or subscribing in your favorite podcatcher. Don't ever want to miss an episode. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. But now, back to work, because break time is over. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Love up.
Love up.
Even if you don't have a partner today, we love you.